Show me the money.
This is the MoneyWeb Be a Better Investor podcast, picking the brains of professional investors on their investment strategies, successes, and mistakes. Your host, Rake Fanica.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Be a Better Investor podcast. My name is Rake van Niekerk, and joining me now is Wayne McCurry. He is a senior portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investments. He is a household name because he's been in the industry for nearly four decades and a true doyen of the investment world. Wayne, thank you so much for your time today. 40 years is a long time. Do you still enjoy looking at screens and investments every day?
Yes, I do. I must say I still find it very interesting and also very frustrating, as I'm sure many people who are involved in investments and have their own personal investments will also appreciate those two opposite emotions when it comes to investments.
But let's go back. Where do you come from? Where did you grow up? And did you ever dream of becoming an investment specialist?
No, not at all. I grew up in Kimberley, but I moved to Pietermaritzburg after I finished the army. And I happened to get a job there with a firm of chartered accountants. I didn't even know what a chartered accountant was, but I managed to land a job there and I studied and eventually became a chartered accountant. Then I moved up to Johannesburg.
What was the job you had at the chartered accounting firm? The first one?
No, it was an article clock. I did my articles there. It was quite interesting. I had a June intake with the army, so I finished in July, and I joined this firm of chartered accountants, and they said to me after a month or two, you know, what university are you going to register with? And I didn't even know you had to study to have that job, but anyway. So I eventually did, after many years, part-time actually qualify as a CA. And I moved up to Johannesburg, and I joined a company via a very long lineage as what today is Momentum. It was a company called LifeGrow, which was the old Legal and General Volkskas, and Momentum eventually bought LifeGrow, and then Rand Merchant Bank bought Momentum, and then First Rand and Southern, and that's now ends up with the First Rand group that we have now. Obviously, Momentum's been spun out of First Rand. So essentially, I've been working for the same company since 1988, or the same group of companies since 1988.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal journey. In that journey, when were you first exposed to investments per se?
Yeah, that was also a complete coincidence. I was an accountant, sort of a budget stroke management accountant at Momentum. And a good friend of mine was the chief accountant in the investments division. And he asked me to actually come and help when the people won't remember this, I'm sure, when the whole Christo or Greg Blank scandal came about. I went to go and help. It was early 90s. I went to go and help him on the admin side. And then a terribly tragic set of circumstances. The portfolio manager that was employed to take Christo Oret's place actually committed suicide in our building. And the head of investments there, Peter DeToy, which I'm sure lots of people know about, asked me to step in and help him on the investment side because of this tragedy. And that's how I ended up in investments, and I've stayed there ever since.
It's an unbelievable story. Just tell us about your first few years as an investment specialist.
Look, I did a lot of learning in the early years. I mean, you just sit back, you know, and that's an advice I can give to people who are new in this field, is just keep quiet and listen intently. So a lot of listening, a lot of looking at things. Of course, the days were very different. We didn't have live charts and, you know, PCs were only really just coming in. So you looked at a lot of books, and we kept, amazing enough, a lot of hand-drawn charts of share prices and everything because it didn't exist. So the first couple of years was a lot of learning. And I suppose the biggest thing I learned is how to talk to clients and deal with clients and hopefully, you know, allay their fears about investments. Because essentially, and the people don't believe me when I say this, essentially our job is actually a counseling job. You know, we talk to clients, we try and say to them, listen, this is the kind of portfolio you need, this is the risks you'll take, we'll do the following attributes in your portfolio, we'll structure it this way. But it is, in essence, helping people and counseling people, especially when times are tough in the markets, you know, to stay the course, don't panic, you know, this will pass, you know, we'll better days are ahead, or, you know, the valuations of the market are the following and you should expect the following to happen. So we are heavily into talking to clients and counseling clients, actually. It's by far the biggest part of my job.
Those days, and I also am going to give my age away, those days being a stockbroker was, I think, the pinnacle of the investment world.
Yes.
I don't think the advice side or the role of analysts were that pronounced at that stage.
No.
You know, obviously you were on the research side. How did that part of the business develop over the past few decades?
Well, it's changed phenomenally. I mean, we didn't have SENS. We had a library that was stocked by, I think, 3 full-time people. And they used to take all the financial statements and all the cutouts from newspapers about companies and the Financial Mail and the Star newspaper business section and the Sunday Times business section and collate all of these articles about all of the companies into files for these companies. So we had a massive filing room. I mean, the filing room itself must have been, 150 square meters, 200 square meters. And filing cabinets, and we had a chief librarian, and she had 2 assistants. And then you would go and pull out this thick file on a company and read and look. And I mean, spreadsheets weren't even around, you were still doing it by hand. So it's vastly different now. And of course, you relied on stockbrokers. Stockbrokers used to come and see you and talk to you about companies because you very seldom met companies yourself. They didn't do presentations to the public about their results and that. I mean, they obviously used to publish them in the newspapers. And I think the newspapers have never been the same since SENS has come along, because they used to take 2 or 3 big full pages, the big companies, and give you all of their results. And, you know, that's not even done anymore. But it was very, very different. And advice was certainly very different. And there's been many changes to that, obviously, over the decades. Because quite frankly, to be honest, you know, insurance products were sold to clients based on the commission that the agent or the broker was getting. You know, it wasn't necessarily the best product for that client. All of that has also changed.
Yeah, those insurance products were very, very expensive, extremely high commissions. Luckily, they have disappeared. And I think the unit trust industry has just taken over. I can't remember that there were many unit trusts early 90s. And now it's the mainstay. And obviously the advice and the research have changed from individual stocks to the analysis of the suitability of unit trusts. So how do you think the financial advice industry today can improve? It has evolved. Obviously, we will see a continued evolution of financial advice. How do you foresee it going forward?
Look, I think the role of a financial advisor is clearly still in place. But a lot of people with the access to information and the tools that are available now will start over time essentially doing their own financial advice and their own restructuring. The job of a financial advisor will never disappear, because we are all still human. No matter how much technology is still around, we're all still human. We all want to talk to people who know more about the field than what you do, etc. But there will probably be less involvement. You know, certainly, the number of financial advisors over the last 20 years is probably 1/3 of what there used to be, because the industry has changed dramatically, because you've got to be qualified now to give advice. When I started, anyone could be a portfolio manager. Anyone could give advice. You know, now you've got to be qualified. I mean, even portfolio managers, we've got to write exams to be qualified to manage other people's money. That didn't exist when I started. So I think the industry will slowly over time evolve, that a lot of people will start doing their own financial advice and their own financial planning, because there is so much more information around and accessible to people that just wasn't there beforehand.
AI will most definitely play a role. Have you seen AI tools becoming available, which has you worried and excited at the same time?
Now, look, I mean, AI is just machine learning. I mean, there's no such thing as actual intelligence. AI in investments will do the same sort of thing as what we do in investments, is you try and guess the future based on past experience and past knowledge and past data. And no one knows the future, not even a machine knows the future. So it will have an impact. It will certainly assist. But, you know, things evolve all the time. I just, to digress ever so slightly, I can remember my grandfather telling me the story about when the first aeroplane flew into Kimberley and got their first telephone. I mean, these were mind-boggling changes. You know, we, surprisingly enough, haven't even experienced anything of that magnitude. So this evolution and the changing of the world and the way we work and the way we act and the way we do business, it evolves the whole time. So this is just part of the evolution. It's not going to change the industry fundamentally. And what I've found with these big so-called revolutions is they're actually far more evolution than revolution. They take a significant amount of time. I mean, I can remember going to a presentation in the mid-90s saying that, you know, within a few years, everyone will just be shopping online. The line shops won't exist. We'll all just sit at home and click buttons and have stuff delivered. You know, we're only getting there now. And we're still a long way from that. But, you know, online sales are now only 20, 25, 15% of total sales. So these things take a significant amount of time to actually impact, but they are unstoppable. So AI is unstoppable in investments, but luckily enough, as I said earlier on, even the cleverest machine in the world can't predict the future. So I don't think they're going to replace investment managers with AI any time soon.
That is good to hear, because I think it's a wonderful industry to work in, and it will be disrupted most definitely. But it will be interesting to see how it develops. But let's talk about your investment journey. What was the very, very first investment you made with money you have earned?
I've been a little bit different from a lot of investment professionals, is that obviously I have on a very rare occasions bought shares in my own name, but I don't like the idea of an investment professional trading in the market often. I mean, the number of times I've traded in the market, and I'll come back to it, I've done it twice in my life, because I actually fundamentally believe it's a conflict of interest. You know, you must apply your best investment thoughts and advice for your client and not have the side distraction of all your own personal shares that you're now looking at the screen and worrying about and stuff like that. So where I have made my own investments, I've made obviously via my company, a huge investment in First Rand, which I still got, and that's been very successful over the years. Other than that, all of my savings have gone into unit trusts or portfolios where my clients' money is as well. So I managed my own money exactly the same as what I've managed clients' money. I have, as I said earlier on two occasions, gone into the market PA. One was after the big crash in COVID. I thought the market was just too cheap. And I bought some shares, lucky enough, near the bottom there. I sold them too early, but that doesn't matter. And right now, I've bought some platinum shares because I think they are massively undervalued. But those are the only two occasions where I've invested out of my own pocket into separate shares and not into unit trusts or investment product portfolios that manage on behalf of my clients. So in other words, I've always treated my own money the same way as what clients treat it now. A lot of people don't do that, but I personally think that that's the right thing for an investment manager to do.
I think it's absolutely the perfect thing to do, because you put your money where your mouth is, quite literally. And, you know, if your clients benefit, you benefit. And if you benefit, your clients benefit. If you could go back to yourself in 1998, I think that's when you started working, and you could give yourself investment advice, what advice would that be?
Yeah, I started working in 88, yeah, but that doesn't matter. The investment advice I would give myself, I've actually been through sets of circumstances, quite fortunate in my investment portfolio, my own personal portfolio over the years. So I've never really fallen into any trap. In other words, I never left a job to cash in my pension. So what advice I would give myself, quite honestly, is just do the same thing. Keep saving, don't cash in your pension, keep your pension going along. And as I said, I've been very fortunate in that I never got caught in the funnies. I never got caught in the dot-com bubble. I never got caught in the financial services bubble in the mid-90s. I didn't get caught in the resource bubble in 2007, 2008. You know, but I've also missed out a few things. Like, I wouldn't touch Bitcoin. I don't like these cryptocurrencies. I just don't understand them. And so, you know, maybe I've lost out on a very bumpy ride, but so far a very lucrative ride. But I would just say, do the same thing. And I am obviously an accountant by nature, so I'm a fairly conservative person. I like diversification in portfolios. I don't like going for the next greatest big thing that's ever, ever happened, and you must put all of your money behind it. Some things do work, obviously, but a lot of things don't work. So I've always believed in diversification and spreading your risk, and it's not terribly exciting, but over the years, I think it is the right way to conduct yourself in investments.
So if Easy Equities existed when you were just starting your career, and obviously you were exposed to investments early, you then would open such an account and you would deposit money in there. It's an exciting experience. I've seen my son do it and he was really excited about the process. But then, you know, there was 5,000 Rand in the account. And then comes the big what now? In what do I invest? And in addition to pension savings or RA contributions, so how would you address that what now?
I would give the sort of following advice, I suppose. Investments is not a rocket science business. It genuinely isn't. No one must be scared about investments, is that they don't understand it and they don't know what to do. There's no rocket science in investments. A lot of investment professionals try to make it out as though it's such a terribly difficult job and it's so onerous that only I can do it and you as the retail investor mustn't even try. That's total and utter nonsense. It's not unintelligible. It's not, you can understand it. You can, over time, actually do quite well personally, but a couple of ground rules. And the biggest one by far, and I genuinely believe this now, even though I didn't believe it when I was a youngster in investments, is the only free lunch in investments is diversification. It's the only thing you get for free. The rest you pay for. So whatever you do, when you're starting out, pick 10 shares. Pick shares that are well known, that are well represented in portfolios. Do a bit of research, read up a little bit about it, but stick to shares that have been around for 20 years, that have proven themselves through thick and thin and economic cycles up and economic cycles down, and just let them sit and mature. And then every now and again, if you hear something exciting or something grabs your interest or you hear someone talking about it and you want to take a little bit of a chance there, put 5% of your portfolio or 8% of your portfolio into it, and you'll get two or three right, and you probably get 10 wrong, but then you learn. You know, you learn through this process. You must just be involved and interested and be prepared to look and listen and read and listen to old guys like me and you talk about investments and, you know, watch the investment news on television and stuff like that. You know, just be involved. It's not a science.
Now for the two questions, everybody waits. The first one is, what has been the best investment you have ever made, the one you are the most proud of?
I would say many years ago when Rand Merchant Bank bought Momentum, there were about 12 or 13 of us Momentum people who were invited to come in and buy some shares in the new company. And we had to borrow money to do it, and we had to mortgage our house to security against borrowing that money to do it. And it was quite risky, but we ended up with First Rand shares, and that's the investment I've been most proud of, because even though it's not per se a high flyer like the AI shares now and Nvidia and all the tech shares, it's been a good solid compounder over decades and decades. So that's the best investment I've ever made.
Have you ever sold a First Rand share?
Very few, not many.
That brings me to the second question. And what do you think is the worst investment you have ever made?
That's an easy one, because believe me, in investments, you only remember the disasters. You don't remember the good ones so well. You remember the disasters, and people, your clients and people who listen to you on the radio and TV, they also only remember your disasters. Now, this actually wasn't a bad investment per se over time, but at the time it was catastrophic, and that was Kumba Iron Ore. I mean, Kumba Iron Ore 2008, I think, hit 600 or 800 Rand. I can't even remember, during the commodity boom. And then it just got thrashed and it fell. I didn't own it at 600 or 800 at all in my client portfolios, I mean, talking about. And it just got thrashed and thrashed and thrashed and thrashed. And it got down to 120. And I thought, this is it. This is cheap enough now. I bought it at 120 for my clients and for myself, because I had money in those portfolios. And the thing went to 25 or 28 Rand. And, you know, obviously your clients are upset with you and you know, you feel bad. Do I know what I'm doing? But I didn't sell. And the next stop was 600 again. So over time, it did actually pay off. But for the year or the year and a half, while it fell from 120 down to 25, that was really tough.
I remember that, but it bounced quite quickly. It hit that 25, yes. 26 rand level, and then it ran. It was actually quite a phenomenal case study of how shares can recover.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because when it was 25 rand, Anglo's wanted to sell it. It wasn't deemed a core asset. I mean, the Anglo share price itself got down to 52 rand in that same time period. And that was compounded by the Minister of Finance being fired and Desmond van Rooyen being put in for the 4 days over the weekend and ex-President Zuma. So it wasn't just a down cycle in the resource side. There were many, many truly big problems in the South African economic and political sphere as well. So any South African shares, you know, they got totally thrashed. But yeah, it's difficult. But look, over time, and we got a saying here in investments, you know, over time, if you hold a share long enough, you'll probably eventually be right.
Wayne, thank you so much for your time and sharing your insights. And yeah, you know, I'm sure you're going to still be one of the top investment managers for many years to come. And thanks for sharing your insights.
Yeah, well, thanks for those kind words. Thank you, Rick.
That was Wayne McCurry. He's currently a senior portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investments and one of the doyens of the South African investment industry.
Show me the money.
That was the Money Web, Be a Better Investor podcast with Raik van Niekerk. Thanks for listening. Catch up and listen to all the Money Web podcasts on moneyweb.co.za or the app. Money Web, your trusted source for business and investment insights.